We're very excited to have actor, producer, filmmaker, Bo Jesse Christopher here tonight. Now, I learned something new about Bo. Bo was born and raised in San Francisco. I love this town. He's based in LA. He's named after legendary blues guitarist Bo Diddley and the infamous cowboy outlaw Jesse James. You have very bold parents. This is great. Bo is best known for his portrayal. Right on. Bo is best known for his portrayal as the younger brother of Patrick Swayze in the classic original feature film Point Break, directed by Academy Award winner Kathryn Bigelow. You know her also for The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. He's appeared in the Warner Brothers $100 million reimagining, also of Point Break, directed by Erickson Kaur as the FBI director. He is also recurs as Max Fielder in the CBS hit TV series NCIS. This guy has appeared with Keanu Reeves, Christopher Walken, Neil Patrick Harris. He's been on shows like Married with Children, one of the shows that I absolutely loved growing up and had such a, you know, amazing impact in terms of humor on me, and Beverly Hills 90210. He is, you know, has been part of the prestigious Stella Adler Theater. His work as, you know, what he does with actors and how he transforms their performance is mind blowing. And we're so blessed to have you both. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. That is a, you know, humbling and amazing and spirited and inspired introduction. I appreciate that immensely. It's so good to be here. So I'm excited to connect with you and everyone on this Zoom. So let's get into the work, man. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Now, you guys, I've had the huge pleasure of visiting Bo's studio, where he works with some very talented rising star actors. We're about to go into a new production here. Bo, our students here, our young filmmakers, have finished one film, one short film. They're about to go into another one. It's a very powerful story about being a young mother, getting pregnant before time, and the kind of pressure and the sort of, like, you know, how people view, you know, younger girls that, you know, become pregnant early on and sort of like write them off. And this girl's going to go through a journey to basically show that she can still make her dreams a reality. It's a very powerful message. You are so instrumental at getting actors to be their best and perform. What can we apply as filmmakers, do you feel, to getting our next film to have such a strong performance? How can we prepare our actors, mindset-wise, performance-wise, to be the best they can be?
It's such a rich question. It's such a powerful question. So, you know, is there one person that maybe I can direct this to? I think this is a universal response.
Angela is the creator of this project. She's going to be co-directing with Ethan. And so they're a team on this project. And we have these amazing filmmakers backing them up as cinematographers, editors, producers.
So, Angela, do you mind coming on with your video just so I can see you, so I can talk directly to you?
Yeah, let me see. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay. Let me see. I'm using my phone, so would I disable the camera?
I don't know. Don't worry about it. Let's see. We're not going to make it a thing. Here's the only reason is because a big part of the answer to the question, in my humble view, is that what you see and feel does in fact exist. And so when you can see and feel, you pick up on the impulse of the way it feels, you find that deep, meaningful connection to who you are, what you want, how you feel, and how you feel about the other people who, you know, support you and oppose you. And I think what you end up doing as the storyteller, in terms of what's, you know, what your responsibility is as the actor for camera to tell a story in a deep, meaningful way, is to really emotionally connect to circumstance and who you are, what you want, how you feel about the other person. But a lot of it is seen and felt. And so it's impulsive. We're not waiting for the cues. We're not playing the character. We're not playing the character on the outline of the way it's drawn. We're actually becoming the person, which leads me just to a quick little anecdotal Stanislavski's philosophy, which is the actor should not imitate or impersonate, that we should become the part by working on the link between the role and the reality of our own life and emotions.
Wow.
It's felt. It's felt. So really the simple way to look at the answer to your question, Daniel, and if this is helpful for all of you beautiful human beings who are creatives and have permission to speak your truth, is find your emotional connection. to the circumstance and make it yours.
Wow.
You have something inherently you need to say, you know, you have feelings. We all have feelings. And so the act of expressing is outwardly, you know, putting that thing into motion. It is emotion, right? So I think we always have to track and figure out the emotional connection from story to your own life and circumstance, vertically come together and make it yours moving forward. Lean into the way that feels and speak from feelings to thoughts, to words, to actions, listening and responding, you know, picking up on the impulse of the way it feels and wanting to say this stuff. You don't have to. I want you to view it in terms of you want to. You have such a deep resonant feeling in your heart's core that you want to say all this stuff, this beautiful stuff that's scripted from the feeling to the thought, to the word, to the action. So it's all completely motivated. And I think that's the way to kind of live in front of the camera. Also, just real quick, because we're on this tangent, I think it's really important that actors develop a healthy interactive relationship with self. So then we feel we can take self and put it in front of a camera and have that healthy interactive relationship with camera as if it's a friend who wants to listen to every drop of everything that you feel you want to say. And even when you choose not to actually verbally speak, it records beautiful truth with body language and behavior and micro expressiveness that rises and reverberates into the face and is often framed and then recorded. So it's your friend, that camera. It's listening, it's responding. You know, it can't take its eyes off you. It loves you, it adores you, but it needs to listen to what you have to say in an honest, authentic way. So stay honest, stay disciplined, and stay inspired. That will serve me well.
Holy moly, I think the screen's gonna freeze from the truth that you're emanating. This is unbelievable. So from the thought to the word to the action is the way that it flows, Bo.
You forgot the fact that it starts, it ignites with a feeling.
Feeling.
We see it, we feel it, it exists, the thought to word to action.
Wow.
Yeah, so we see it, we feel it, it exists. And sometimes we don't even have to see it, it's a feeling, it's energetic. You know, it's energy, energy is life, my friends. Without energy, we don't exist. So energy is life and it's felt, it's always felt. So you see it, you feel it, and then the rest happens, thought, word, action.
Okay, and micro expressions could be very small details in the actor's performance.
Okay. Micro expressiveness is beautiful because, you know, when you sit in front of a camera, like we're doing with Zoom, one of the wonderful things that I love coaching in a Zoom space is we're exactly where we want to be. We're in front of a camera. We have a tool. So instead of saying, oh, we're at a disadvantage, I miss the acting theater, it's like, well, that's not what my TV and film career looks like, by the way. I never go to the theater when I audition for TV and film. I sit in front of a camera and I audition. I either self-tape or live virtual audition now, or when I was going in and auditioning, I was in front of a camera. So what am I doing here? How am I showing up in the work? How am I claiming this creative space? So really, once you book the job and you're on the set and you're here in front of a lens, what you do in front of the camera is very intimate. I can talk to the person, not at the person for everyone to hear theatrically, but I can talk to the person. And what happens is I can suppress and sit on feelings. And when you suppress a feelings, it creates tension. And tension lives in the frequency, the energetic frequency, and the pace and the tone and the intensity of the piece that we're involved in circumstantially. So what happens is it all rises to the surface and then reverberates in the face. The body has no choice but to let it out somewhere. And it always rises to the surface into the face. And you get all this beautiful micro expressive behavior, body language and reaction happening that the camera, because it's a lens and it magnifies everything, sees all that beautiful nuanced performance. So we don't have to pretend or play or push the acting. We just have to sit and hold space for the way we feel and trust and listen and respond. And it's a very intimate experience. And the camera picks up on that. It's your friend. It hangs on every moment. It's all about the moments, you know? So sometimes doing nothing is doing something, but it's always deeply felt.
Wow. This is so inspiring. You know, Bionai's mentor, Doug Claiborne, worked with Francis Ford Coppola for many years. And he said that Francis would always put up a sign on his productions that said three words on it. And it would say performance, performance, performance. That was what he was about as a filmmaker. I was just watching this film called The Insider again with Russell Crowe. And yeah. I feel like that suppress that you're talking about, where the character was so stressed out and had so much like emotion stuck in them and so many weird feelings and guilt, that it was just coming to the surface through these micro expressions that you're talking about. Have you seen this film?
I have. It's been a while, but I know exactly the type of moment you're talking about. We've all seen them. Look, you know, there's nothing more more relatable than like if we feel we're inside the circumstance with the actor, we're sitting with the person who's holding all that tension and pressure, and we're feeling the claustrophobic nature of the circumstance, and the lens and the, you know, the shot, you know, the way it's framed represents that psychologically, emotionally, physically. But the actors don't need to push the acting, because we're living, breathing organisms. We're already doing so much just by sitting in front of the camera and just being grounded, conversational, real, speaking from feelings to thoughts, to words, to actions. I mean, can you feel the soft tone, the genuine, soft, sincere tone in my voice right now? I'm speaking to you guys, all of you. And this is the camera technique. And it's not an acting thing. It's more reactive, listening and responding. You know, what if we were in that circumstance? But really, we have to have that connection with self first before we can sit and be vulnerable. And vulnerability, my friends, is our strength. We have to get away from wearing the mask of words. What's behind, you know, the mask of words underneath the exchange of information? That's where we can really show the camera, our friend, who we are, if we were this person in this circumstance, and what we want in the micro moment, or what we want overall. There's always an objective. There's always something worth living or dying for, something worth getting out of bed every day and going towards. So who are we? What do we want every day when we wake up? And if we can parallel that as actors and jump into the circumstance and understand who we are as the character and what we want as the character, then it's a life worth living. It's a story worth telling. And then we can find those moments, because now we're wearing a feeling and we go after it with people who oppose us in the story or who support us. And so we always come into the scenes with strong points of view, willing to adjust accordingly, listen and respond, ebb and flow. You know, that's a little bit of that space that we leave for the surprise that happens while the cameras record beautiful truth. So it's not a perfect thing, because nothing in life is perfect. It's always flawed and fragmented, and that's universally relatable. That's the stuff that really connects. So without connection, it's just disconnection. So I would say listen and follow the heart. The mind is already attached. It's already emotionally intelligent. So just follow the GPS system of the heart. It will serve you well. And let the camera record that beautiful truth. Simply put.
So, wow, this is so deep. So with Angela and Ethan's film as directors, they can basically have the actor figure out like how this story really relates to them and their experience, how they feel about the subject matter. What is the need of the character? What is motivating them? What is the inner life of the character? Are these some of the drills that they could, you know, conversations they can have with the actor to make it truthful?
100%. I mean, I'll give you four basic foundational choices you should make as actors, no matter what, if it's scene work, or if you're auditioning, or if you're taking on a film or a TV series and you're the guest star, you're the series regular, whatever it is, writers write for these four principal foundational choices. Okay. They always write for who is this person? So ask yourself, who are you as the actor? Who am I in the story? Who am I? Understand the writer's intention, certainly, but ask yourself, who am I? That's choice one, write that down. And that leads to, what do I want?
What do you want?
What's the story about? So, because there's always about something you want. You want justice, you want respect, you want whatever you want. Make a choice about it, because the information's in the story and your collaborators will come together and collaboratively you'll discuss, you know, who the character is and what the character wants and how the character feels, which would be the third choice. As a result of who you are, what you want, there's a feeling. So how do you feel? And then there's people in the world, the antagonists, right? The people that don't support you, that get in your way and create conflict, hence drama. So how do you feel about that person? You know? And then how do you feel about the people that support you? Because there's always a little bit of support in there too, the ensemble, the supporting cast, you know? So I think if the writing understands that and direction understands that, then the actors are also responsible to understand and make smart, strong, emotionally connected choices that answer those four things. Who are you? What do you want? How do you feel? How do you feel about the other person? And usually it's simplified, because if you take, I'll take my iPhone here, and let's pretend this is just, I'm building a house and this is the foundation, right? And I'm going to build a house here. So if I'm going to build a story off of a foundation or build a character off of a foundation, I need to start with the four principal corners that support foundationally what I'm building in terms of story or character. So who am I? What do I want? How do I feel? How do I feel about the other person? When I can flesh out the deepest meaningful connection to why I choose who I am, what I want, how I feel about the other person, now I can start building a character on the support foundational base of that. And so story and writing should look to do that too. And usually it all comes together and it becomes one strong piece of storytelling on a collaborative level. And you know your part in it as the actor or, you know, the cinematographer or gaffer or the production designer, whatever it is, right? We're all headed in a direction. And ultimately, you have to be responsible, if you're the actor, for the authenticity of the emotional connection to the piece of storytelling, because you're the on-screen subject that is bringing this story to life. And so then it harkens back to some of the things I was just going through in terms of approaching the work by getting to know your emotional self so you can put your emotional self into the work. And it becomes cathartic. It becomes a creatively cathartic, meaningful experience to sort of write your emotional poetry and flush it all out, repurpose some negative stuff and repurpose it and outwardly express the way that feels. lean into that, put it right into the piece of storytelling, because that will connect. It's connecting to you, so it'll connect to the audience through the portal of the camera. I hope that answered your question.
That was just mind-blowing. Cathartic is cleansing, right, guys? So I just feel that we're going to take what I'm getting from this conversation with Bo, which I'm so thankful for, is that we're all going to take this knowledge and we're going to think about who is this character, what do they need, how do they feel, and we're going to interpret that through every single department, through the camera, through the editing, through the music, through the locations we pick. You know, Angela has lived this story. She's going to know the truth of it as a director in, you know, working with the talent and making sure that they understand these four foundational, you know, questions, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think one of the ways to clear space just to allow everyone to come together is just send positive energy through your team, love, ease, and flow. And if it goes against any one of those things, then it doesn't fit, you know, it's not a match for you folks. So positive energy, love, ease, and flow. If everyone can ride on that channel, on that frequency, then you guys will come out on the other end with something very special, very dear, very meaningful and cathartic. And you'll have something really, like, you'll be proud of the thing that you created in terms of it being a piece of art and life. And it will translate because it will connect to people because people feel that and get it. Even if they didn't directly live that story, it's felt. So it connects on some level because we're emotionally intelligent, you know, creatures, and we watch things and maybe we didn't experience that exact thing, but we felt something that feels very universally relatable. And so there's a cathartic experience for the audience too, because everyone immersed in the collaborative effort was feeling it along the way and had that to contribute, whether it's behind the scenes or in front of the camera.
Wow. Bo, this is, wow, I love this so much. I love this. You're very poetic. Now, before, what are some of the things that Angela and Ethan can do as filmmakers before they hit the set with their talent to create that authenticity and that truth, do you feel? Is there, I come to your workshop and I feel there's things that you do with these young actors that get them to break through this plasticness and this superficiality to reach something real?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, it's a little bit more complex because as filmmakers, you know, the question can be addressed from the writing side of things to the how you crew up and surround yourself with people who are connected in the way that we're describing and, you know, synergetically on the same page and in the same direction, who care enough to contribute whatever their expertise is. But certainly when you're the filmmaker and you're communicating with actors, if that's more specifically what you're indicating.
Yeah. Like prepping before hitting set, like you do some wonderful transformative drills in your workshop. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Well, okay. So if we're really getting specific about, like, say, director communication shorthand with actor before actors go in front of a camera, I love the Meisner repetition exercise. I don't know if you folks, I'm sure you guys have, you know, heard about Meisner or practiced Meisner, the technique a little bit, the repetition exercise, but Meisner's got a beautiful philosophy, and it's, you know, it's basically the more you can take in about the other person, the more you can leave yourself alone and live truthfully moment to moment. So for every second, you know, you're in an observation of another person or your surroundings, it's a second you're not in your head thinking about what to say or do. So you're present. You're living in the present moment. You're emotionally connected to see and feel. You're emotionally available to see and feel. And not just to see and feel outside your own self, your own, you know, your own energetic thing that you're holding, carrying in that moment, but to really be able to open up the frequency in which you're feeling and outwardly express it and leave it open for connection to someone to connect to that thing. So two people actually line up in fine moments, connectivity, you know, it's the connective tissue that's the unseen but felt stuff that we have to find. And that is felt. That's not something we think about. It's something that we feel, you know, it's vibe, right? It's vibe. You walk into a room, music's good, feels like a good vibe. You kind of move to the dance floor. Your body starts going like this because all of a sudden, you know, it feels good to be here. You see some people that you know and see what happens in my face. All of a sudden, there's just a micro reaction, emotional response in that. So I think the approach is that we don't think we feel, because you're gonna think no matter what, because your brain's attached to your body. There's no way around it. But the practice is that we really focus on all this heart space and the way our nervous system is reacting to circumstance. And we honor that. We don't avoid, we don't deflect. We go to that. We lean into the way that feels. We stand at the edge of opportunity and we lean into the way that feels. We jump off the edge and we catch beautiful life wind, which is that moment to moment truth, and we fly. And by flying is we live in our moment to moment truth, and we can navigate because we've trained ourselves to live in the forward feel, not the backwards think, the forward feel, the now. And so if that's the way you approach shorthand communication with an actor and the actor understands that, then trust the actor. Don't overcomplicate and confuse the actor and force the actor to think about all this stuff that you're saying to the person. Create a shorthand that is felt, some basic shorthand, and then you have to trust your actors. Because then the actor can actually sit in the way it feels instead of thinking about what you're trying to say. Keep it simple, short, and felt. And that's a really interesting way to approach communication between actors. You know, the Meisner exercise is wonderful if you're the filmmaker and you want to practice it with your actors, just so you guys can create. I think what you could do is, you know, director to cast, you guys could run the exercise before you start shooting to really build some community and some connectivity and maybe break down some of the barriers of thinking and get away from avoiding some of the stuff and allow some of the actors to cathartically use the exercise to shed some of that protective skin that we use in everyday life that really doesn't serve the actor because we can't see and feel the actor behind barriers. You know, most actors hide behind the words and it's like you're hearing what they're saying, but you're not feeling it. So if you can melt away the acting, and all of a sudden the camera has a way to look and see and feel what's really going on, that's the shorthand you all should work on. And if you don't have people that will support that, because sometimes people just don't have the time or can't visualize the way that looks and factor it into your preparation, take the time as independent artists to really get to know yourself and then lean into the way that feels and say, my vulnerability is my strength.
Wow. Okay. So, oh my God. Okay. In terms of like, how do we know, how do you know when you've cast the right person? Because you've directed like some amazing work. How do you know when you have the right person for this role? Like Angela's got to find someone that she feels understands and can convey what it's like to, you know, do what to experience and communicate what she's gone through. How do you know when you have the right actor?
I think it's felt.
Okay.
I mean, you know, simply put, I think it's felt. you feel it, right? It's like, you're like, oh, you know, oh, wow. You know, it's a thing. It's like dating. If we're doing it in a healthy way, which most of us, you know, we're all learning how to do it. We're all learning how to date in a healthy way. I mean, that's why we're all laughing, because it's like the hardest thing to do in the world is to match with people, because we're all, you know, we're all individuals and we're trying to match with people and trying to find partners. And yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. So casting really isn't any different than that, because they're looking for the right match. You know, if you're a filmmaker and you wrote something, or if you, you know, are partnered with the writer, and, you know, one person's writer, one person's director, and you're looking for something and you have shared ideas, but maybe two different responses to actors is a little bit of a tug of war, a little bit of a, because that happens, you know, like, oh yeah, we're both on the same page until that one person shows up. You're like, well, I really like this person. And the other person's like, well, I know you do, but I really don't, you know? So there's a little bit of a difference of opinion, but I think the person that is ultimately the right match will make the consensus, the happy medium, sort of feel like this is the authentic choice. And so you have to trust that. If there's something in that human being's ability to connect to what you're trying to accomplish in terms of telling a story, listen to that. Listen to the way that feels. And if you're the actor trying to audition for that, you gotta listen to the way it feels so you can show up in the work. And that's the way to get them to connect to you, creators to connect to you and say, that's the person, because it's felt. There's no two ways about it. You know, there's politics and other things that factor in, you know, but if you're just going off of pure instinct and feeling, you're honoring the way it really feels, you'll know it when you see it, because it'll be felt.
Wow.
I think that's my opinion anyway.
Instinct. Okay, good.
We have to trust that, you know, because at some point you're writing, so you're trusting that you can write. At some point you're directing, so you're trusting that you can tell the story. You can, you know, you have this sense of direction. At some point, you know, each of us has to trust the very thing that we're saying we are and that we're responsible for when we come to do the thing as professionals. And so we have to trust the process, our personal process and our instincts. And we have to leave a little bit of room for the surprise. The surprise is what ignites, you know, the lifeblood that keeps us really fired up to do the thing another day. You know, that's the excitement. And so we have to, it can never be a perfect thing. We have to leave a little bit of room for the surprise. You might have people in mind, but any one person can come in, audition, and change the course of the way it feels.
Wow, yeah.
To their advantage.
Yeah.
So it's anybody's game. You know, why not you? You're enough. There's only one you. There might be people like you, but there's only one you. Lean into the way that feels. Make it yours. Show up in the work, you know? And either way, win, lose, or draw the job, you can be proud of what you contributed in the presentation of your work. Because ultimately, you're an artist. You're sitting in front of a canvas. Like right now, this camera is my canvas. And you folks are painting this moment with beautiful truth, with me, with all of us. And so this is a original, unique, authentic creation. It's living and breathing. And it's in the forward feel, it's in the now. It's still in the forward feel, in the now. So trust that. What you do with the moment, it absolutely counts. And listen, if I said all this stuff with no emotional connection, you wouldn't be along for the ride. So as actors, we have to connect to this stuff and lean into it, because I'm changing the course of the way this Zoom feels because I have the passion. And also, I want to inject the passion into you folks, because why not you? You're enough, but you got to show up in the work, which means you got to understand who you are at your emotional core. And so that's why I love the coach work, because the coach work really is the preparation that can meet the opportunity, you know? So the two things coming together puts you in this wonderful space to book work and to then sit in front of the camera and, you know, tap a deep, meaningful connection so people actually can take that away with them after the experience.
Wow, I love that. I love that. So the preparation is what allows you to successfully meet the opportunity.
I think so, yeah, because then you're not thinking about what to say or do in right. The presentation of your work. The time for thinking is in advance of the moment, in my view. You know, so preparation would be part one, moment would be part two. Moment is the moment you step in front of a lens and the cameras start recording. You know, the time for thinking was in the preparation. You don't want to be caught thinking about what to say or do while the cameras are rolling, because it will just throw the whole, you know, equilibrium of what you're trying to accomplish off. So good old-fashioned hard work in advance pays off and allows you to really free yourself in the moment so you can just really feel the music and do the dance.
Wow. What are some things that you do and that like Angela and Ethan can apply to really sketch out and make that character real? Is it like perhaps, you know, wearing certain clothing or reading about the history of the character, or what kind of research do you do that brings about that truth, do you feel, for you?
Well, sure. Well, you know, first for me, and I think most actors would agree, is it starts, it's got to be on the page.
Okay.
If it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Okay.
I mean, that's kind of an old line from, you know, from back in the theater days, but like, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. It's the truth. So I think the writing's got to be foundationally sound. And yeah, because then it can speak to the actor, and then the actor is informed by what's happening with the beautiful writing, and it almost takes care of itself, because you're going to read something and you're going to have a different response and say, I'll read it and have a different response. But when the writing is rich and it's, you know, it's well crafted and it's deep and meaningful, it's not on the surface, then all of a sudden any human being who reads it can sort of visualize what it is, feel the meaning, tone, and intensity to correspond with the circumstance, and then start to see themselves in the world of that play. And then from there, you start building choices. And again, start the foundation for me. Who am I? Oh, okay. What do I want? Oh, that's, of course, that's what I want. But I start feeling that smart, strong, emotionally connected choices to who I am. Not just who am I? What do I want? How do I feel? How do I feel about the other person? And then it's not felt. Strong, smart, emotionally connected choices about who I am. Why am I here? How did my life lead me to this moment? And what does that feel like, which motivates what I want? And then in that moment, because I've still got conflict, I've got to achieve that goal, there's this feeling, you know, and it's layered, right? Like we get up every day and we might want something in the micro, but it's not just one feeling about it in life. It's got a lot, it's layered. It's emotionally dynamic and it has different things going on. And in any given moment, something can trigger us in a different direction or inspire us or whatever it is. So it's layered, but we have to understand who we are and then visualize that. And also, I think it's really a wonderful thing to understand cinematically what you think the audience would see. So by design, what would this piece of storytelling look like cinematically, visually? If you can put yourself in the audience this piece is meant for, then you can approach what you're doing in front of the camera and through the lens in a way that honors that synchronicity throughout the whole process so you can achieve that goal. If you come in, you don't know what the story is, still working it out, don't know what kind of camera you're going to shoot it on, what kind of lenses, don't have an idea of shots and what, you know, your central character is, you know, it's a mess. It's like anything. It's like an actor who's like, I really want to be an actor, but then never does the preparation, shows up late or flakes. I mean, can any of us relate to that? You know, like, but here's the thing, like you have to be honest about where your commitment is in general, in life, but also in art. And you got to be disciplined. And most importantly, you need to be inspired, because that gets you out of bed every day, going towards that goal. So if your characters are designed that way, then the building the role off of the way that's written takes care of itself too. You know, and I think that would lead to the answer to your question, I hope. But again,
you know, though, I really agree with you. I feel like, you know, actors are always talking about, I need good material. They want to do good material. I think you're right. Good material speaks volumes. If it's real and it's a powerful story, then it expresses itself almost automatically, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun. Listen, it's a lot of fun to play characters that aren't that well written. But guess what? Halloween's a lot of fun too. And wearing a costume's a lot of fun. but that's one night a year. You know what I mean? And I eat too much candy and I feel sick to my stomach after. It's kind of how I feel when I do a crappy movie. You know what I mean? It's, it feels like a Halloween costume that I wore and I don't want to see it again because I ate too much candy. Do you know what I mean? So like, so I think that the things that we want to really ultimately be in and do are cathartic love stories to ourselves for the rest of the world, because the rest of the world needs to write their love story and then send it down the line too, in some way, shape, or form. So what you guys are doing, and I don't know the story, sounds pretty meaningful, pretty raw, pretty gritty, pretty dramatic, and an important story that needs to be told. So find the way that feels at the core of that. And ultimately, you know, what does that character really want? Because that's the thing that's going to be endearing, because then the audience will want that for the character. And then you have to put some obstacles in the way, obviously, because, you know,
that's
you
great want story, that
person to work through, you know, the obstacles and achieve levels of success. And ultimately, you know, we can all relate to that universally. You know, we're up against it every day.
Now, Bo, you use the word cathartic. So you feel that like these roles have to be somehow healing for us as an audience, healing for the character. They have to be able to transform and grow from these experiences, right?
I think so. I mean, look, this is just based on my own experience of not acting experience. Yes, acting experience, but based on my own, look, my point of view right now in this experience with us sharing views from my experience, from where I sit, yes, everything that I do, I try to make it meaningful. You know, not unlike the way I'm talking with you folks. You know, I'm not just coming in here pretending like I'm the cool, crazy cat and talking about all the things that we don't care about. Like this matters to me because I think it's important work. It's important work for me because I'm working on myself through this work, finding out more about myself, which is the most important thing I could do for myself in this art form. And so what that does, it becomes transcendent because I've chosen this form of acting and art that allows a camera to record it. And then people will watch that ultimately. So I like to choose and gravitate towards smart, well-crafted, meaningful pieces of storytelling. We don't always get those opportunities, but I think if I'm, for the most part, looking for that type of work, because it's going to help me tell my story through the circumstance, you feel me on that one? Then, yeah. Then on the receiving end, the audience hopefully will connect to that and have some sort of meaningful takeaway from that. So I've put it forward, but it had to start with me first. I had to heal me first in that way, to your point, in order for someone else to feel like, oh, I'm not alone too. Yeah. You know what? And it's okay. It's okay. I can honor that feeling. I can lean into that. It's a shitty feeling, but guess what? I own it. And now I can convert it, repurpose it, and outwardly express it in my own meaningful way. I hope each person can do that and find an outlet to do that. And the creative arts affords us that platform, which is the beautiful reason why I love acting, you know? And for me, putting it in front of the camera allows me to tap into a wider grid of people that can receive that message and maybe, you know, find some solace in that as well. So healing or cathartic or meaningful or powerful, either way, you know, it starts with my journey.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. Yeah.
I love that.
No, go ahead, Angela. Go ahead, Angela.
Yeah, please.
No, I needed to hear that. I love that. That's really inspiring. That's kind of what I'm trying to do with my story. I want to inspire other women. So I really needed to hear that. So I love that. That was beautiful. That got to me. That hit a spot.
Angela, I feel it. And you know, and the cool thing is because I can't see you, it's a vibe, right? So, and I feel you, mm-hmm. Angela. So what you're doing, I know is connecting. So follow that. That's the power source. That is the life force energy. You know, let that guide you. Let that guide you.
Yeah.
Trust that.
And you are. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And people connect along the way. You know, that's the thing. And if you see that there's something that's not a match, just like relationships, then we can go in a different direction, just like a relationship. You know, we don't have to be stuck in unhealthy relationships. We don't. We get really used to the patterns and the narratives, and that these are those loops. you know, the shadow work that we all talk about, you know, but like, you know, it's just like characters that we're writing and stories that we're telling and actors who connect or don't connect. It's all a match energetically. And mm-hmm. it's feel like a healthy connection. You know, that's the kind of thing. Well, is this the type of person that understands and gets it? Is this person willing to wear their heart on their sleeve and write their music into this thing, you know, tell their story, sing their song through your words, through your camera lens, you know? That's a mm-hmm. beautiful thing.
Yeah, I agree.
So I wish you all the best. I feel it. I already feel like this is going to be amazing. So, you know, thank you.
Wow. What is shadow work exactly, Bo? I haven't heard that term before.
Shadow work is, I mean, a lot of you probably have heard this term or dealt with it. I mean, it's in all the therapy approaches recently. It's a term that deals with basically your child self, you know, the constructs in which we've been taught like under the age of 7 or 8, and we kind of get stuck in those constructs. And so it lives in the shadows because as we mature and grow forward in life as young adults, we forget that we've been taught a certain way and we live in those patterns and that narrative subconsciously. So it's in the shadow, not in our foreground, but it exists. And we have to recognize it and go back to it and put some light on that and say, well, what part of it serves me in a good way? And what part of it doesn't anymore? And you can break those cycles. You can, you know, you can rewrite your narrative and lean into what actually does feel like it serves you now. And so that's really interesting because the more work we can do cathartically, and that's the key word, as people, the more we can actually approach the nuanced aspects of the emotional, physical, mental approach to building a character, you know? So we kind of become self-healers in order to actually build a character that we can really deeply understand and go forward into the storytelling and find more than just what's on the surface of the character, the outline of the character. Because a lot of times, you know, a breakdown description of a character is just drawn with the outline of a character. It's got, you know, it's got information, but it's basically, you know, so-and-so, age so-and-so, grifter-drifter does this, you know, on the run from the cops or whatever, looking to get across town before sunset. You know, it's like, okay, sure, I can play that, you know, but like, where can I build some of my stuff into leading up to that moment? And then also having conversations with the writer and saying, well, where's that inspired? Where's that coming from? And then, you know, ultimately all the things through your filter and then poured into the work is really interesting. So there's a lot of different ways to approach life and art in front of the camera. It's a really interesting process. There's no one way to do it, you know, but I think it's always felt.
I love it. Feeling. Guys, I know Bo has to get onto another meeting, but is there any, like a couple questions. Anyone have a question for Bo that they're dying to ask him?
Yeah.
Me? I'm kind of, yeah. Oh, Magalie looks like she has a question. Oh, this is good.
I have a question too, but.
Okay.
Oh, okay, who wants to go? How about my son Magalie first? Magalie, can you just ask your question?
Yeah.
Sure. Hi, Bo. Sorry, how can I pronounce your name?
Bo Jesse.
Bo, okay. Nice to meet you. Can you give us an example or share us an experience where you had like a good connection with a director when he/she was directing you to a specific emotion during a scene?
Yes, I can. Quite a few of them actually. Let's see. I'll give you a more recent one that deals with television because the mediums are different. Television, like primetime television with commercial breaks, moves a little bit faster. And you basically are told from directors not to feel anything, but just to kind of say the words because they have time restrictions in what, you know, what they can shoot and edit and put on the screen in between the commercial breaks. So if you have a scene, that's really intense and emotional, you have to kind of get to it quickly in order for it to end up on the screen. So there's, so you might have to go faster and more intense, where actors sometimes need a minute to kind of let that happen. And so some of the training prepares you for, say, television, that has got to be faster, tighter, and in the pocket, and less on the surface, and less emotion, and more to, exactly to the moment and to the words. So I was doing Fox's Deputy on Fox in 2020. It was a TV series, 13 episodes with Stephen Dorff and a few other people. And I played the bad guy in the show. And the first time I was in front of the camera, we had wonderful work. And I was doing like some really intense close camera stuff. And it was just great tension between me and Stephen Dorff. And the director was loving it, but he came up to me and he gave me that note. He said, I love everything you're doing, but you got to go faster, or else I'll have to cut to Stephen just to cut out the emotional moments. He goes, I don't want to do that, because what you're doing is wonderful. So if he goes, if you can just go a little bit faster, I won't even cut to him. I'll just be on you the whole time, you know, in the edit. And so that was an interesting lesson for me, because up until then, I thought, you know, oh, you know, if I need the time, I'm going to just take my time and they'll just have to deal with it. So that was like a disciplined sort of TV experience. And what ended up in the edit was exactly what he said. He left all the moments on me instead of having cut away, because I was able to consolidate an emotional performance. I was still emotional and felt and intense, but I went a little faster and I got everything out that needed to be out in time, which was great. Now, going back to a more holistic experience would be like, you know, Catherine Bigelow, Point Break. Let's just go to Point Break. So I'm working with Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves, and I've got a death scene, my first death scene. I've done a lot of them over my career now, but my first death scene in the film, where I have to get shot in the neck and I have to kind of die slowly in Patrick Swayze's arms. And I have to utter a few words to him while that's happening. And I'm, you know, holding on to Patrick Swayze and I'm looking right at him. And I could see this scene. Before we shot the scene, I was like, oh, I could see this. This is the way I see this scene. And but it was only scripted. It was only like an eighth of a page. So it was an eighth of a page is about this much of a page, you know, two or three sentences. You know, Gromit gets shot in the neck, he dies. Like there wasn't any lines or anything. Like, oh, he's got to say something. So I remember Patrick Swayze used to call me every night after we worked around midnight, and he'd say, all right, this is what we're shooting tomorrow. What would you say? Like, you know, what would you say in this scene if you were going to say something? And so I would write lines and ideas and stuff. And because I visualized, I had a dream about this scene. And I said, well, this is what I think would happen. I get shot, but I die slow. I don't die right away. I die slow because I wanted on-screen moments. And I hold on to you. So you're supporting me. I'm telling Patrick Swayze this on the phone. And then maybe I'm like pleading with you, look in the eyes, because I'm the younger brother and this is what you got me into. So it's a big moment where it shows that you've really like have shame and regret, because now your brother's dying and like everything's gone to hell, it's gone to shit. But if this goes too fast, no one's going to feel that. So let's slow it down, Patrick Swayze, you know? And so we wrote in some stuff. We get to the set and Catherine Bigelow is like, okay, let's block the scene, let's do the thing. And we show her what's happening. And her first reaction is, no, we don't have time for that. We don't have time for that. It's just a quick shot and then you die and then you're out, you know? And so Swayze, being the awesome supportive big brother of mine who he was like, no, this is the way we're gonna do it. Please watch, we worked this out last night. And so we worked on this collaborative sort of thing with Catherine, because we appealed to her in terms of the emotion and the importance of the integrity and the emotion of the moment that the audience would connect to. So it was like, this big filmmaker all of a sudden was like going, okay, all right, fine. I think I get that, show it to me again. And so we were working, we let it evolve and develop, and it became, you know, a pretty powerful on-screen moment for the film, and it turned the whole second act into the third act. And it was like that moment completely like defined the act break. And it might not have if we just skipped over it and didn't spend the time, but Catherine Bigelow was willing to listen, and that was beautiful. And then she was there sitting very delicately on board with the idea and just being very soft with me and saying, you know, and trusting me basically, because I had it worked out, but it wasn't a perfect thing, but like really listening and just throwing a couple things at me, you know, in a whisper, not talking at me, but talking to me very softly. And I love that. I love that sort of direction. Let me give you one more example. So I was doing True Detective season 3 on HBO, great series. Season 1, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Season 2, Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell. And season 3, Mahershala Ali, Stephen Dorff, and yours truly. So I'm doing True Detective, and Daniel Sackheim is the director, and he directs a lot of the Game of Thrones, you know, episodes, a big director, and I'm working with him. I'm going, oh my God, he directs all the Game of Thrones stuff, and I'm a True Detective, and they flew me to Arkansas to do True Detective, and this is amazing. And I'm like, don't get in your head, save the heart, all the things I'm talking about. And I'm doing great day one, episode one, you know, delivering my stuff, feels really good, wearing a big mustache, you know, I got Northwest Arkansas, you know, accent, kind of working the accent and kind of listening, just kind of like throwing it in, slowing it down. And it's feeling good. And so, but all, you know, the multiple cameras, and they're usually shooting the stars first. The cameras are on the series regulars, and then they get to the supporting cast. So you got to recreate. So I was perfect in everything until, of course, they put me the close-up on me. Now, okay, Bo, it's your close-up, you know? And now I'm in all the other shots. So I know that my wonderful performance that I thought was, this is great, is covered in all these other angles, but my close-ups are now, okay, here, now your close-ups. And I'm like, blood sugar level crashing now. It's before lunch. I'm like, okay, all right, cool, let's do it. And as soon as they start recording, I start fucking up, basically. You know, I started having a couple like little things. It's for the first time in the whole day. And I remember Daniel Sackheim, to your question, comes up to me, and this is a guy who doesn't need to do this for me. He comes up and he goes, Bo, you're doing great, man. Like, he goes, your performance is amazing. And he was really soft and genuine. He's a smaller guy. He was sitting behind the cameras in the monitors in another room with all the HBO folks. And I didn't even see him until this moment. He comes up to me and he goes, from behind me, he taps me on the back, hey, Bo, dude, you're killing it, man. You're doing great. Words of encouragement, really soft, really kind. He goes, you got this, man. He's like, take your time. This is your close-up. Don't worry about it. It's like, it's all working. And then I was like, oh, okay. There's no stress. Just keep doing it one moment at a time, one piece of thing. And he really softened me up, got me out of that kind of that tension that actors hold, that anxiety, that performance adrenaline. I let it go. And it was like, okay, you know, this is great. I've been doing this all day. I am this guy, feeling it. Just be the pro, Bo. Deliver a couple takes and boom, then you're on to the next episode. And I just remember how soft and gentle he was. And I remember thinking, he probably did that because he encounters a lot of actors who are really good, who sometimes have moments, and he needs to get what he needs to get, but he's approached it in a very encouraging way. And he's, you know, it was like a massive director, could be a total jerk about it, but didn't. It was like, hey, man, you're doing great. This is awesome. Don't worry about it. You know, get it on the next take. And I was like, bingo. And I got it. I delivered it. And it was great. And, you know, and then I kept working with him and loved him and talk about it all the time. So thanks for the question.
That positive validation is so huge. Just as you said, if there can be as much love as possible on a set, then you get the magic. I love that. That's great storytelling.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also just to tag on that, you know, it's the way I coach also. I encourage actors, because I think the old way is to discourage actors, to see if they're made of the stuff that is the hardened actor thing. Like, oh, are you made for that? You know, can you withstand all the no's to get to the yes? There's this old archaic way of like approaching coach work or acting tutelage where, you know, my way or the highway. I think that words of encouragement and elevating and supporting and coaching you to your true potential is probably the most valuable approach to working with an actor. It's the most valuable way to create a healthy interactive relationship outside of acting. So why not inside of the art form and encourage people to go forward? Because anybody can do anything that they want to, as long as they lean into it. So I want to support that. You don't have to be, you know, abused and traumatized in order to be successful as an actor or anything. You know, that's just unhealthy. So it was nice. That Daniel Sackheim was encouraging, and it spoke to me. It was kindred to the way I approached the coach work.
But you know, it actually reminds me of something. I remember I'm really into this film, My Own Private Idaho. I know you have some fondness for River Phoenix as well. But one thing that really shocked me about the making of that film is that River Phoenix, at one point, to Gus Van Sant, just said, this is how I want to do this campfire scene. I want the camera like this. And he basically just let, Gus just let him do what he wanted to do. And I think that was a very powerful scene.
Yeah, that's the scene where they, you know, where he tells him he loves him and he wants to kiss him. And yeah, there's, it's great. It's a beautiful scene. I love that scene. In fact, that's in my, you know, the rotation of scenes that I have, because there's a lot of feelings and a lot of universal dynamic between that. It doesn't have to be male-male, female-female, male-male. It's just, you know, feelings to feelings.
Yeah.
And it's a beautifully written scene that was ahead of its time, you know, and Gus Van Sant recognizes that. And I think to your point, you know, he is his own shot master. So he knows where to put camera in a very deconstructed way. And then he trusts the actors, Keanu and River, to sit there, because those guys had a relationship. They are beyond the film, those guys. You know, those guys had chemistry and still have chemistry, even though River is beyond. So it's like, it's one of those things where when you line up the shots and you put your friends, the cameras, on your friends, so your friends are with your friends and everyone, you have this intimate setting where the cameras are your friends and you just let them record truth, then the actors understand that their friends are listening. They don't have to project or deflect or avoid. They just have to sit and feel and let their vulnerability be their strength and then talk to each other. And what happens in between what's being said is all this beautifully felt, again, micro-expressive behavior, but body language. And so a lot of the performance in that scene in particular is in what's not being said. It's all the stuff that's happening in between what River wants to say when he really, you know, is kind of like agonizing over really wanting to tell Scott, you know, the characters, how he feels, Keanu's character, you know, and he's torn up inside about it because he loves the guy and he knows that Scott's going to reject him because, you know, Scott's not gay. And Mike is, you know, kind of thing. So there's, you feel that tension and you feel for River, you feel for Mike, his character, because he, you know, maybe doesn't feel like he has a permission to speak that truth. And a lot of that stuff lives underneath the exchange of the verbal information. And that's what the camera can record, all that beautiful truth. That motivates the want to say the words. And so all that stuff is part of the storytelling, to your point.
But I think I'm going to be such a better filmmaker and director after this short workshop that we're doing. I knew you have to go. I do want to end off just, if possible, the last, was it Angela that had a last question?
Yeah, let's get another question in for sure.
Yeah, okay. I have one question. Well, I actually had two, but I believe you kind of answered the first one with feeling. The first one was actually, how do you know when the actor is not the one for your role? That was kind of the first question, but I believe you kind of answered it with feeling. You have to feel, you know, you just got to feel if, you know, if they're the one, or body language. So I kind of feel like you kind of answered that one.
It's a dating game, right? Like if you sat down with somebody mm-hmm. on a first date and you were just like, this is not my person.
Yeah.
It's that, you know what I mean? It's that. It's like this person's no. Because think about all the time and energy it takes to write, to direct, to raise the money, to crew up, you know, all the time and energy to make the shoot, the thing, to put the thing together. You don't want to, you know, put someone in your film that energetically doesn't match with, you know, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's just like dating. It's like dating.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same thing for like agents, managers, you know, you find your people and then just chalk everyone else up to experience that helps you flush out and a clear path to what you really do want to put in front of you that connects, you know? So,
yeah. And I have one more question. Where do you see where directors mess up a lot? Just so I could, you know, advise, just so I could kind of know.
Sure.
What's something that you noticed, you know, from directors, oh, they could have done this better or, yeah, so.
Okay. I think I know the answer to that. A lot of it lives in everything we've been talking about, but imagine this. Imagine if you're an actor and you show up to a set, the director doesn't know what he or she's doing, has no sense of direction, scratching their head, no connection to the story, really unorganized, no vision, no communication. And then you're just on your own and someone who's not the director says, okay, we need you in front of the camera. And then you're just going, well, I mean, I have my version of it, but now I'm looking around seeing how unorganized it is. And I'm starting to feel like maybe I don't want to be here anymore. So, but I'm here, so I'm going to do the thing. And so all this, it's just the beginning of the end for all the different departments, all the different reasons. So director has to have a strong vision, overall sense of direction, and really visualize your film or your TV pilot or whatever it is, like visualize it. Listen, it's going to change. It's going to, you know, because you're going to visualize it and then you're going to get what you get on the day, and it might be better. It might be a little inferior, you know, maybe not the great location you wanted, but still does the job, whatever it is that changes, but your sense of direction, your passion, your connection to story and purpose. Mm-hmm. There's a reason I want to direct this, and this is why, and that's my purpose. Don't lose sight of that. If you lose sight of that, you lose sight of the ship. Right. And then people jump off the ship. They abandon you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to drive the ship no matter what. Sometimes you weather a little storm, but you got to stay with the ship because you're the best person, the most well-equipped for this particular thing. And you took on the thing. That's your responsibility. And there's a reason. And that's the purpose. And that's the drive. Mm-hmm. Maintain that, because actors love that. So do crew. You know, maybe a person in the crew comes in and goes, hey, I can make a quick $100 for the day, or I can make whatever it is, you know, and it's, you know, but then they're going to be like, this thing's a piece of shit. I can't wait to get off this thing and take my $100. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't want that. Mm-hmm. That's bad energy. So, but it's true. People, they feel like no one's listening. People come in all the time and they just want to make a quick buck. That's like someone who just wants to take you out and fuck you. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that. I'm sorry, but you know, I'm just keeping it real. But like, you know, but that's the unhealthy stuff. So because you know your shit and you know why you're doing this and what the story is and what it means to you. In other words, you know who you are. You know what you want as the storyteller. You know how you feel, right? You know how you feel about the people that support you and your projects. And now you can go forward into that. If you don't, they won't.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Hey, I kept it real, a little edgy, a little provocative, but it's kind of fun, kind of stimulating, you know.
But I need smiling. That, so.
Angela, you're gonna do great. You're gonna kill it.
Thank you.
You're gonna kill it. Because listen, you're putting a voice to it already. You're already there. You're leaning into it. We're on this call. I can feel it. You know, we're already flying forward into that feel. And it feels good, Angela. So you and everyone on this call, you know, just stay that course. Stay that course. And if we get bumped a little bit along the way, it's okay. We know where the road is. The road is felt. If it doesn't feel good, then you're not on the right road.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Can I just title your book, Flying Forward Into That Feel?
Totally, yeah. Okay. Yes, I have like 20 books that I'd love to write because my mind is like, you know, a mosaic of ideas. But anyway, this is awesome, Daniel. Thank you so much.
I'm so blessed. We're so grateful for you. Guys, can we just give a big round of applause for Bo?
Thank you.
Guys, a round of applause. Thank you. Guys are amazing. I have to say, I really am humbled and honored to be on this Zoom. I really love Zoom. Because I wouldn't normally be able to see you folks and we wouldn't be able to share. Yeah. And so Zoom actually has some wonderful things. Would I rather be in person sharing it? 100% yes. But this is really interesting. And we're in front of the camera, my friends. We're filmmakers, we're writers, we're directors, we're producers, we're actors, we're camera storytellers in essence, you know? So the camera's a tool. We're kind of right where we want to be in front of the camera. So let's carry that positive energy down the line when it comes to, you know, the Zoom world. Anyway, so Daniel, you're great, bro. I would love to come back anytime and have more conversation. If you need anything from me, if any of you want to reach out to me, do you mind if I share how they can get a hold of me?
Yes.
Okay. Or anybody watching this podcast?
Yes.
So I've got a beautiful website. Yeah, I've got a beautiful website. It's www, isn't all, they're all www.bojessechristopher.com. BojesseChristopher. BojesseChristopher.com. Sounds long. BojesseChristopher.com. Everything you need to know about me and how to get a hold of me is on that website. And that's the only time I'll sell myself. But I love people and I love the craft and I also love career. So if anybody needs anything from me, you know where to find me. Let's lean into the work. I'll leave you with these three things, Daniel, okay? You guys write this down. I want you to stay honest, disciplined, and inspired.
Wow.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're amazing. You're truly amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's a practice. It's a practice, my friends. Every day I practice it because, you know, hard. Practice, application, practice, application. So is, by the way, the artwork. The artwork we do is a practice and an application. So it's not a perfect thing. And if you do something and you're not as, you know, stoked on it as you feel you should have been, it's practice. It informs the next application. Practice, application.
So practice it and then keep on doing it, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Whatever you learn, good or bad, from this experience, put it into the next one.
Okay.
But don't continue the bad habit in the path of, like, if you learn something, then, you know, learn from the mistake. You know, we learn so much in the failures. We really do. It also keeps us going. It establishes the good fight and, you know, the wherewithal within ourselves to keep going. And we don't have to be traumatized and tested to figure out whether or not we're up for the job. We are. We're human. And by the way, we all deserve success. There's a permission to speak our truth. We deserve to make money, and we will walk fearless in life. Okay, but walk forward in life fearlessly is what I want to say. You know, all these affirmations, just hold them close to you and lean into it, because you all deserve it. You're all great. And I'm, you know, you made my day.
You made our day.
All right, you guys.
All right, Bo, thank you so much. Thank you to all of you guys. I really had such an experience with this community. Thank you.